in trouble.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Brian, are you there?
I am.
All right. Say hello to Mike Mulvihill.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's up? Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. I know you're super busy, so we can get started.
Okay.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on The Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Michael Mulvihill, who is EVP of Research, League Operations, and Strategy at Fox Sports. In disclosure, The Big Lead's editor-in-chief, Jason McIntyre, is an on-air personality at FS1. Mike, NFL, it's not even off to just a hot start now. We're at really the three-quarter pole of the regular season. Everything's up across the board, all the networks, all the windows. And that's even more impressive when you consider that the rest of television is by and large down. Can you contextualize how much it's up versus how much everything else on television, especially scripted entertainment, is suffering?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. Happy to be with you. And I think everything that you just said is what I would probably say myself about where we are, you know, basically two-thirds through this season. If you look at viewership across the entire league, the whole league is up 6% across all networks, all windows. And you're exactly right. I mean, this is a moment in our business where scripted primetime entertainment is really struggling, shows off by double digit and in some cases high double digit percentages. We've seen ratings declines for some other sports properties as well. You know, it's early in the season, but NBA numbers are down a little bit. College football numbers across all networks down by a single digit percentage. We actually were up 3% for our regular season, but the sport in general off a little bit. So, and we definitely feel like the NFL trend is bucking the trend of the industry in general, which is great news because it really is probably the most closely scrutinized and hotly debated rating story and, you know, viewership story in television and in all of media. I think there's more attention paid to NFL ratings than there is paid to ratings for anything else, and with good reason, because obviously the advertiser marketplace there is as large as it is. So it's great to have the story be as positive as it's been now two-thirds of the way through.
How much of it is star quarterbacks that are A, not injured, and B, popping up like Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, et cetera, et cetera? How much of it is NFL rules helping scoring? How much of it is the protests in the rear view? And how much of it is just some fatigue with the news? I think news and sports are somewhat substitute products. And people, although you mentioned some of the other leagues aren't doing quite as hot as the NFL, maybe people aren't quite as into live news as they might have been in the last year or two.
So I'll try to take those in the order that you brought them up. I think more than anything, it is the quality of the product on the field. And it's that we are in what I think could fairly be called a year of the quarterback. You know, every major statistic that is tied to quarterback play and to the passing game across the entire league is tracking at a record high rate, whether that's completion percentage, yards per game, touchdowns per game. You know, I don't think there's ever been a time where across all 32 teams, the level of quarterback play has been this high. And so related to that, when the quarterbacking is this good, I guess inevitably scoring is going to be up, which it is. And this part isn't inevitable. It's not necessarily driven by quarterback play, but it's just a fact that we have more close games this year than we've had in quite a few years. We have more games being decided by one possession. We have more games being decided by 3 points or fewer. That obviously is something that's going to positively impact viewership. Something that we've noticed over here is that coaches are going for it on fourth down more this season than they have in, I believe, 9 years. I mean, it's quite a while since we've had this rate of fourth down tries. So if scoring's up, if the passing game is the most prolific it's ever been, games are closer, coaches are taking a more aggressive approach to their play calling and their decision making, I think that all adds up to something that's a little bit more entertaining than what we've had the last couple of seasons. At the same time, you know, you talk about metrics on the field that are down, penalties are down, replay challenges are down. So the elements that can add a little bit of tedium and interrupt game flow, those are actually less intrusive than they've been the last couple of years. So I feel like all of it has contributed to just a more entertaining television show. If you look at the amount of time that the average viewer is spending watching per game, it's up by a couple minutes. We always like to look at reach of the league, you know, how many people are watching any football at all, how frequently do they tune in, and then how long do they stay tuned in when they're with us. Well, what we're seeing this year is that the reach is actually down a little bit, you know, not in any alarming percentage, but a few percentage points fewer people are watching the NFL. But those who are watching more frequently. And when they tune in, they stay tuned in for longer, which I think probably has something to do with the game itself just being more compelling. So that's the first part. You know, the player protest of last season, I do think that early last year when the president made his infamous comments about the player protest, that elevated that story and that controversy to a place that it hadn't previously been. And I think we're grateful that this season, you know, the conversation has been more about just the game on the field and some of those quarterbacks that you mentioned, and that the games are closer and that we've got good division races in involving some of the bigger brands in the league. So it just feels like that story has faded away a little bit and probably to our benefit. The last part of your question, you know, I'm not really convinced that there's a decline in interest in news coverage. You know, the news cycle is as fast as it's ever been. It's the fastest that I think it's been in our lifetime. You know, we're still seeing an increase in total consumption of cable news. It's now very, very likely that news will, again, be the most watched genre of television programming for this calendar year. Now, for years and years, scripted drama was the most watched genre of national TV. That changed last year for the first time, and the percentage of TV viewing that is attributable to news will go up even further this year. So I don't feel like there's any general lessening of interest in news and primarily events coming from the White House. But because the interest in the player protest has sort of, I don't know if I want to say died down, but it's at least plateaued. And because the quality of the game itself is so good, that seems to be adding up to a pretty favorable scenario for us.
So this is your first season having Thursday night football. You've done a big marketing campaign around it. Now it's a game. It does feel less like I used to really dread Thursday night football, but it feels like it's been better this year. I don't know. What do you attribute that to? Is it matchups? Is it the fact that you're really trying to brand it as more meaningful? How do you think that the reputation of Thursday nights has kind of elevated this season?
Well, first of all, I really appreciate you saying that because it's obviously our intention to elevate the Thursday night package. And, you know, in the words of our president, Eric Shanks, what he said all along is that we just want to make Thursdays as good as Sunday afternoons. That's why Joe and Troy are out there calling the games every week. And that's why we've got our pregame guys, the same guys that you have seen every Sunday morning for 24 years, now doing the Thursday night show in New York as well. So hopefully, just in terms of game presentation, we've been able to take it to you know, the same level that people are accustomed to seeing from us at 4:25 on a Sunday afternoon. I do think that the quality of the matchups this year has been the best it's ever been. You know, when you have games like the Saints-Cowboys game last week, Packers-Seahawks a couple weeks ago, Vikings-Rams, which kicked off our package, and the Chargers-Chiefs game that we're going to have in 2 weeks to close out Thursday Night Football, I mean, those are all games that would not be out of place at all on Sunday night. So I think the quality of matchup has really been elevated, and the NFL has been a fantastic partner to us, you know, working with us to produce the best schedule possible. Now, hand in hand with that, the reality is that not all of our games have been close games, and that's the one thing that we just simply can't control. You know, we're always at the mercy of events on the field. It's just the nature of our business. And we have had, as of 2 weeks ago, we have had an average margin of victory of 20 points on Thursday night. Now, the Saints-Cowboys game was close, so that obviously helps. But in a year where the league generally has had closer and more competitive games, you know, the first 8 weeks of Thursday Night Football were kind of going in the other direction. We had the great game last week, and we actually set a record. It's the most watched game in the history of the Thursday Night package. So I think we've demonstrated, you know, what is possible when you have a great matchup and the game is actually close, and lo and behold, we do 22 million viewers. Hopefully we can do something approaching that for that Chiefs game in a couple weeks. Everything has really gone brilliantly as far as our first year of Thursday night, except that, you know, in some cases, the margin of the games just hasn't been what we would wish it to be.
For the last couple years, you guys have had an Own the Fall campaign. So it's Thursday Night Football. Friday night is going to be WWE SmackDown. Saturday, you have Big Ten and Pac-12 football. Sunday, of course, you have NFL, and you've got the World Series thrown in there. From a marketing perspective, from one night to the next, I noticed that you guys say, okay, this is going to be on tomorrow. This is going to be on Saturday. This is going to be on Sunday. I'm interested, from ad sales, do you bundle all of these audiences together, or are NFL sales separate from World Series, separate from college football, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, there's a lot of variability in that. I mean, you can't really say that it's all one thing or all the other. I mean, obviously we're in the business of selling as much content as an advertiser is interested in buying. So if we've got a client that wants to buy across all of those properties and do business with us in a really aggressive way, we're equipped to do that. We're also prepared to do business with people who, you know, have a particular interest in one property. So I don't want to speak for our salespeople, but I think across all the networks, you know, we really have to be as flexible as possible and be ready to accommodate our clients in any way that they want to do business, however narrow or broad that might be.
That makes a lot of sense. I also wanted to ask you about renewing the World Series. Now, ratings are down a little bit this year, which was a little bit surprising considering that it was a pretty good matchup between the Dodgers and the Red Sox. That's not Yankees-Cubs, but it's one of, like, probably the six or seven best matchups you guys can have. Can you talk to me about what gave both sides the confidence to renew this partnership for the long run?
Well, I think from our end, it's that the ratings history has been as strong as it has. For the last 3 years, if we go back to the Cubs-Indian series in 2016, the 16 series, 17 series, and this year's series, even though the rating this year was down a little bit, as you point out, in each of those years, the World Series has delivered a higher average audience than every entertainment program in television. So put aside the NFL. But if we just compare to the NCIS's and the Big Bang Theories and everything that's out there in prime time that our advertisers can buy in the scripted world, the World Series has beat all of it. And that's something that I think has been true for a long time. I actually was taking a look at an analysis earlier today where we were looking at the World Series every 10 years, starting this year and going back all the way to 1978. obviously, because of channel proliferation and ratings being splintered across now dozens, if not hundreds of channels, that Raw rating, that World Series rating, is a fraction of what it was 30 or 40 years ago. But when you look at it in terms of the competition and everything that's out there in the entertainment marketplace, the World Series this year rated 8% higher than the number one scripted show in TV. 40 years ago, the 1978 World Series, which did a 32 rating, also rated 8% higher than the number one show in TV that season. So while so much has changed in TV and our marketplace of consumers has fragmented, you know, drastically over many years, we're still in a place where the relative position of the World Series versus everything else that's available to marketers is as good right now as it's ever been, if not even better. So we actually feel really good about where the World Series sits as a premium live event. And I think fundamentally we're in the premium live events business.
You mentioned NCIS and those other primetime scripted shows. You guys have done research that shows that the regional sports networks, the baseball on those networks, outrates the top 10 primetime shows in regional markets combined. Can you kind of go through those numbers for the Baseball is Dying crowd?
Yeah, I like to say that I would love to die the same death that baseball apparently is dying, because people have been saying it's on its way out for 100 years, and yet here it is. It's more valuable and more powerful as a business proposition than it's ever been before. We do like to take those RSN numbers and frame them in terms of primetime ratings in their individual markets, and there are a couple ways you can come at that. One is what you just mentioned, that in a market like Cleveland, the total viewing of Indians games on their RSN, if you take just the minutes of consumption, you know, it adds up to, I think, 2.6 billion minutes of viewing just in the city of Cleveland over the course of a season. And now that's sort of a hard number to conceptualize, but if you take the 15 highest rated shows in entertainment primetime and add up all the minutes of viewing that go to those shows in the city of Cleveland, it's 2.1 billion minutes of consumption. So you're talking about Indians games delivering more time spent. And in the end, like, that's really the field that we're competing on, right? It's a competition for the time and attention of consumers. And that Indians baseball package on the RSN is amassing this enormous amount of time spent. It amounts to about 20% more time spent than the 15 biggest shows in entertainment TV combined. Similar thing in New York. You know, you look at consumption of Yankees games on YES. It amounts to about 6.6 billion minutes of consumption. The top 11 shows in entertainment primetime amount to 6.1 billion minutes of consumption. So I feel like it's a way of framing the numbers for baseball that sort of takes into full account the day-in, day-out nature of the sport. You know, I think baseball is sometimes disadvantaged when it's compared to sports that aren't played every day for 6 months of the year, simply because of the volume of games. A baseball game is never going to do the same kind of rating as a football game, where it's only on once a week and they play 16 times, and, you know, a team might do a 30 rating locally, whereas a baseball team in the same market is doing a 5 rating 6 nights a week. The 5 rating doesn't sound as good as the 30, but when you account for the fact that it's a 6-day-a-week schedule, 6-games-a-week schedule versus 1 game a week, you know, the total time that fans in that market are spending with it is equivalent. You know, we see that in a lot of markets. So that's one way that we try to look at those RSN numbers. Another is that's probably a little bit more simple and straightforward is to just say, okay, where would a team rank among all networks in primetime in its market, right? If the Kansas City Royals were a network in primetime, where would they rank compared to ESPN, Fox News, ABC, CBS, whatever? There are 25 American MLB markets, right? 30 clubs, one in Canada, 4 markets have 2 teams. So that's 25 U.S. markets. Of the 25 U.S. markets, baseball is number one in cable prime in 24 of them, and number one in overall primetime in 12 of them. I mean, that's pretty powerful. There really is no other sport that has that kind of night in, night out consistency of winning primetime.
I have a random analogy for you that I want to run by you, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
So I liken the cable bundle a little bit to the tobacco companies, not in the sense of how bad they are for you, but if you look at the tobacco business over like the last 40 or 50 years, even as their user base has decreased, their profits have gone up because they raise prices quicker than people die or quit. And I read a story from John Oram last year about how ESPN had raised its affiliate fees. And I'm wondering if you see that type of raising prices faster than viewers leave happening in that industry.
Yeah, I mean, that's a delicate topic. It's a hard question for me to answer with real specifics, but I would say I more or less agree with the premise. I think I agree with where you're coming from, that if you look at the numbers that we're seeing for subscribers to our sports networks, just FS1 and FS2, and I would even expand that to include ESPN, ESPN2, NBC Sports Network, you know, the decline in subscribers there, at least according to Nielsen, is pretty mild. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's none at all, but it hasn't been the dramatic, drastic migration away from paying for bundled sports content that I think some people have predicted. Now, there are other networks that have been more severely impacted. But if you just talk about, you know, what we consider our competitive set, the national 24-hour cable sports networks that are part of kind of larger media conglomerates, their trend of subscribers has been pretty healthy. So if you're looking at a decline in subs of 1%, 1.5% per year, and your premise is that that is more than offset by increases in affiliate fees, again, without getting into too many specifics about revenue and pricing, I would say that fundamentally, I think that's pretty accurate. I think that's been the experience to date of all of the big companies that are in national sports.
Thank you. I appreciate that thoughtfulness. One more quick question. Well, I'm two more quick questions, but one of them is you've been pretty vocal on social media that you would like to see social media networks like Twitter and Facebook regulated like television and radio. Can you explain your premise?
Yeah, that's a really rich topic, and it's one that I find absolutely fascinating. And I think you have to think of that question in two ways. One, just as a person who's involved in this business, and then two, just as a citizen, right? Like, just think of it as a citizen in a functioning democracy, right? To take the first part of it, you know, we are obviously competing in an advertising marketplace, a marketplace of attention, as we sometimes say. And when you are a regulated business, which we are, every piece of content that we air, every piece of content that any television news network airs is accountable to both very well-established laws related to the honesty and accuracy of the content. And we're also accountable to our advertisers and our business partners. And so I feel like there's a lot of accountability in legacy media, and appropriately so. And in new media and the social media platforms, there isn't the same level of accountability. And when you are competing for viewer attention, consumer attention, marketing dollars, and you're a regulated media content business competing with an unregulated media content business, which is fundamentally what those platforms are, there's just an unfairness there. We're just at a sizable business disadvantage. So as an employee of a legacy media company, I feel like there's an inequity there. And then putting that aside, even if I didn't have the job that I have, you know, just as a citizen, I feel like what used to be a fundamental respect for the right to privacy has really been chipped at and eroded away. And we have a circumstance now where some of the biggest and most well-capitalized and most powerful companies on earth are able to follow us around as we browse content in the privacy of our own homes, or what should be the privacy of our own homes, and on devices that we have paid for and bought via private transaction. And it just seems like there's something wrong with that. You know, what I like about the way we conduct our business on the traditional TV side is that the way we measure our audience, whatever objections people might have to the Nielsen ratings and the Nielsen data set, that's a very transparent data set. Everybody who participates in our marketplace has equal access to the information. And every person whose behavior is monitored and tracked by Nielsen opts into the sample. They're compensated for their time and their effort to be part of that ratings collecting process. And I think that while the traditional Nielsen system has its limitations, it's ethical. Like, I don't think there's anything unethical about the way that we collect our data and the way that the industry uses it. And it's very different than what we're seeing in the digital space, where people are being tracked without their consent, without their knowledge, and without what I think has been a traditional respect for privacy, a basic right to privacy. And again, like, putting aside the job that I have and the company that I work for, just as a citizen, I feel like that's got to change.
No, all of that makes sense as well. I don't really have anything to add to it. I want to get you out of here on this. I heard you explain on Colin Cowherd's podcast a few months ago, kind of broadly, how the draft works with ESPN and Fox Sports for Big Ten football games. Could you explain that again? Because I thought it was really fascinating.
Yeah, I can try to. It is a really interesting process. I think anybody who loves college football would like to be a fly on the wall when we conduct that draft with ESPN. You know, as you know, we share rights with ESPN to three of the five power conferences. And the way that those games are allocated is that the conferences themselves don't decide what game will be on what network. So that's unlike the NFL, where there's an NFL broadcasting department that puts the schedule together and they decide that Packers Patriots is going to be on NBC and Cowboys Eagles is going to be on Fox at 4:25. And that's a collaborative process, but in the end, the NFL makes those decisions. In the college draft, the conferences put together a game schedule, but then we and ESPN sit down and actually choose game windows in the spring, where we'll say, you know, when we have the number one pick in the Big Ten draft, which we do every year, we'll say, okay, we're going to take the first selection on November 24th. And we pick that date, obviously with an eye toward it being Ohio State, Michigan, but we don't literally take Ohio State, Michigan. We just take the right to have the first choice on November 24th. And then ESPN will choose the right to have the first choice on a week in September. And then we'll come back and use our first pick in the Big 12 to take the number one pick in the first week of October, which will be Texas, Oklahoma. So you go through this pretty long process in the spring where we determine who will have the first, second, third, fourth choice on every Saturday. And then once we actually get to the season, we designate those games 12 days out, or in some cases 6 days out. So as the season goes on, we'll say, okay, we're up to week seven. We have the first pick. We're going to use that first pick on Michigan, Michigan State. ESPN may then have the second pick, and they thought they were going to use it on, I'm just making this up, this isn't this year's actual schedule. They may have thought they were going to use it on Penn State, Iowa, but because events on the field are unpredictable, they find out they're actually going to use it on Wisconsin Northwestern. So because you're drafting windows and not actual games, once you get to the season in progress and you're surprised by which teams are better than you thought and which teams aren't as good as you expected, you can adjust and make sure that you're getting the best game in the best window. So it's a fairly complicated and very, very fluid process, but I think the benefit of it is that because it's as fluid as it is and we're able to react to events as they happen, you know, it enables us to make sure that we're putting the best games in the best possible windows. So it should benefit the fan in the end.
Thank you. That's a very interesting explanation. Get you out of here on this, because I know that you have a hard out. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to yell down from the mountaintops about on this platform?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of ground, actually. If I think of anything else, we'll have to come back and do it again. But appreciate you having me on. Always love to talk about, you know, trends that are impacting our business. I think that, and this won't come as any surprise to you, I think those of us who are lucky enough to work in the live sports end of this business are in the best and healthiest part of the business, the part that's going to drive the future growth of the industry. And just feel like things are going really well and hope it keeps going.
Thank you very much. Once again, that's Michael Mulvihill, EVP of Research, League Operations and Strategy at Fox Sports. We really appreciate your time. I thought that that was all very interesting.
Such turned strange.